The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
He's good to go. And he's put in a tremendous amount of work for me to be able to confidently say that. I think when you search for silver linings with this pandemic and the way things have shaped up, it would be hard pressed for me to find something more obvious than this. It's enabled Ben to reclaim his health. But I think inching along from maybe a month ago that we spoke, that is not true. He's good to go, and we look forward to watching him with what I'm told is, you know, effectively 100% health.
I love his accent. That's 76ers coach Brett Brown saying Ben Simmons' back is effectively 100%. For some teams, his layoff has kept hopes alive because in normal circumstances, they wouldn't have had their stars healthy in time for the start of the playoffs, Simmons being one of them. NBA champion Kendrick Perkins back here with us. Perk, we will get to you in just a second. Stephen A., tell me this. Can Simmons and Embiid lead the Sixers to a title?
I think it's possible because of the times that we're living in. Again, if there's question marks across the board as to how ready other people are, then I think it's something that they could potentially take advantage of. Do I think they will? No. I've said that to Tobias Harris live on national television, and I believe in him. He's averaging 19 this year. Yeah. Ben Simmons is averaging 16, 8, and 7 on 58% shooting from the field. Has only attempted 6 three-pointers this year. He's made 2. That's 33%. But in the end, what that lends us, leads us to talking about is the fact that Ben Simmons isn't the only question mark. He might be a question mark because of his health and because of that suspect jump shot. But Brett Brown is a question mark because of his coaching ability. And I like him as a person. But at the same time, when you invest the kind of money that you're investing in Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, that you've already given to Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler walks out the door, J.J. Redick has to leave because you guys don't want to trigger your luxury tax, all of this stuff. The bottom line is that when you still look at the Philadelphia 76ers, they still underachieved. You still expected better from them. You didn't expect Toronto to be better than them once Kawhi Leonard left. You expected it to be about Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and Boston. You certainly didn't expect Miami to be better than them. But that basically is right there right now. And so for me, it's about what Brett Brown can pull out of these guys and peel out of these guys. They have the potential to go on a run, but it would be complemented by other teams not stepping up to the plate like we had anticipated they would do because the coronavirus pandemic really stalled their momentum. But we have to remember that the Sixers are like 10-24 on the road during the season. They were a horrible, horrible road team. Completely different at home than they were on the road. Last time I checked, none of these games are going to be at the Wells Fargo Center in downtown Philadelphia on the south side. This is going to be in Orlando, Florida. That is a road game. It might not be road in terms of hostile confines going into somebody else's house, but it damn sure ain't the Philadelphia faithful showing up at Wells Fargo to support you. And when the Sixers have been away from Wells Fargo, they have been below mediocre. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to sit up there and definitively say that they can do anything. I would tell you they got the talent to make a lot of noise. Let's see what they do with it.
Well, we see this exactly the opposite, Stephen A. I think the Sixers were always a good sleeper pick, but particularly given these unusual circumstances, they're an even better sleeper pick. And I say that because teams like the Lakers, where LeBron really had the chemistry clicking just right, they needed a lot of runway to get there, right? The Sixers I see differently. You know, yes, the integration of complementary pieces are important, but really the engine of that team is they have two star, almost superstar players in Embiid and Simmons. They're just more, they have two guys who are usually more talented than anyone on the other team. And when you restart, and it's not about, you know, and there's not enough time for teams to get the chemistry just right who rely on 6 and 7 different pieces, two guys like that could very well take over. Now to your point about the road versus the home. I really think the reason the Sixers play that way is because Embiid, without a real good plan from the organization, has been basically self-load managing. You know, he's had to take his foot off the pedal at times because he has various physical problems, knee, back especially. And on the road, he takes his foot off the gas a little bit. And I really think that's why the Sixers aren't the same team. Well, a couple things there. Number one, yeah, they're not at home at all, but they're also not on the road at all either. There's neither home nor road here. All of the games are going to be televised. Everyone's going to be watching. Embiid understands this. And in terms of load managing, he just had a good long rest. And the number one problem the Sixers have, probably even more than the fact that Jimmy Butler isn't there anymore, is that Al Horford and Joel Embiid in particular have not been a good pairing on the floor together. As it turns out, Horford had never played the four at any level of organized basketball, which blows my mind. I kind of think of him as a 4-5, right? But he really doesn't do that. As diverse as his skills are, as he can take the ball up the floor if you need him to. He can shoot. He can defend in the paint. He can play with his back to the basket. He can do so many things. He's not comfortable at the four, especially next to Joel Embiid. So the plan is to have kind of two separate squads, Embiid's squad on the one hand and Horford's on the other, which will give Embiid load management in addition to all the rest. Because if Horford's squad is working, Embiid can rest. I think for all those reasons, but especially because of the level that the talent is pitched for Simmons and Embiid, the Sixers are an excellent sleeper pick in this very unusual season.
Max, you got to be out your damn mind. If you think that the Sixers are a sleeper team, before the season, everyone was picking the Sixers to come out of the East. When you look at their roster, they have
not recently.
They have one of the best duos in sport in the NBA. When you talk about Joel Embiid, a generational talent, one of one. Ben Simmons, a stud. So here's my thing, Stephen A. Max. If I have a problem, if I get into it with six different people, sooner or later, it's not the six different people that have a problem. I have a problem. So with that being said, I don't trust Brett Brown. Right? You had Jimmy Butler last year who had issues with Brett Brown. You had Tobias Harris who came on your show, on y'all show last week talking about chemistry issues. You had Al Horford talking about chemistry issues earlier in the season, couldn't find his way in and find his niche. You have, when Ben Simmons is out, Joel Embiid is a stud. He plays awesome. When Joel is out, Ben Simmons plays great. So to me, it's Brett Brown. Because as a coach, when you're talking about chemistry, that goes to the coach. That means that he's not putting those guys in position to be successful. And I don't want to hear, oh, Ben Simmons can't shoot threes or he can't shoot. Okay, we'll have him spacing the floor, and when they help off of him, have him diving to the basket. Have him playing the dunker spot. I played with Rajon Rondo when guys used to help off of him, and Doc would put him at the dunker spot and have him duck into the paint and get wide open layups. You got to put these guys in position to be successful. So I'm not blaming Tobias Harris. I'm not blaming Joel Embiid. I'm not blaming Ben Simmons, Al Horford. I'm blaming Brett Brown. He's not putting those guys in position to be successful. And when you're talking about chemistry, majority of the time, that falls back on the coaching, and that's Brett Brown.
Well, I don't disagree with you, but you have to look at the players. You have to look at the players, Kendrick, because the players are going to be there with this particular coach. Now, maybe next season comes and he's not there, although I think that this coronavirus pandemic has brought him a reprieve, and as a result, I think you'll see him return as the coach next season because of everything that happened to stall play. But in the end, when you've got Joel Embiid in the midst of a five-year, $148 million deal, you got Ben Simmons, his five-year, $170 million deal doesn't kick until next season. Tobias Harris is already at the start of his five-year, $180 million deal. You see all of these things, all of these players that have been paid. These are who the Sixers have placed their faith in, and Al Horford is getting $100 million his damn self. So with all of those things being considered, you're right. You're going to have to look at the coach, but that is an eventuality. That's not something that's going on right now. Right now, this is their coach. This is who they're stuck with. and they're going to have to find a way to overcome it. My personal opinion is that they should not have lost J.J. Redick. Make no mistake, they should have kept this
team,
Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick. But they didn't do that. And so nobody was talking about them coming out of the East. They were talking about them possibly getting to the conference finals against Milwaukee. But nobody was talking about them coming out of the East the second that they lost Butler.
Yeah, I want, Burke, you say they can't be a sleeper pick. Before the season, they weren't a sleeper pick. But now they are because no one's picking them. That's the point. A lot of people, Stephen A. and I, both were talking about the Sixers coming out of the East or getting to the conference finals. Before the season started, people aren't saying it now. By the way, it's still, Stephen A., about the coach because you either got to figure out Horford and Embiid together or you got to figure out the units separately. You know, guys like not having Redick, Richardson can shoot it. He's not shooting it well this year, 33%, but for his career, 36% from three. He can maybe shoot it well enough. It's the coach got to figure out the rotations, and these guys got to figure out how to play together.
But Max, just because they're a sleeper pick now, they're a sleeper pick because they underachieved. Just because you underachieved don't make you a sleeper pick. The bar is still set for Philadelphia to win the championship. They're not a sleeper. If you go down to Philadelphia right now and walk the streets of Philly and you ask the 76er fans, are they championship or bust or at least making it to the finals, they're not walking around Philly saying, oh, man, we got a chance. We're a sleeper pick. No one is picking us. No. You got two guys, two studs, and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. They are not a sleeper. They underachieved thus far, which is why you're saying they're a sleeper right now, and no one believes in them, and rightfully so. But they're not a sleeper at all, Max. No way in hell.
Okay, number one odds to win the title, the Lakers. Ignore. Number two, Bucks. Number three, Clippers. Number four, Celtics. Number five teams ahead of them. To win the title.
Max, you
okay.
just don't get it.
One of the things
it,
that we got to point
you
with
just
Ben
don't
Simmons.
Get it.
The one thing we got to bring up about Ben Simmons too is this with Brett Brown. Brett Brown said before the season began that Ben Simmons needed to be more of a threat from the perimeter, and he wanted him to at least take those shots to try and keep defenses honest.
Right.
And clearly, that's not something that Ben Simmons did. So, again, that brings us back to Coach Brown, because you're supposed to get them to do these things, and you haven't been able to do that. So I think that resonates as well.
Yeah, but
All right, let's leave it there.
Stephen A.,
the Raptors and the Nuggets are ahead of them, too, when last posted the odds.
But Stephen A., to your point, okay, Ben Simmons didn't work on his jump shot, and he's not comfortable with taking it. How about putting him and bringing him up as the screener and having him roll to the basket and having Joel space the floor with Al Horford and putting Ben Simmons in position to catch it in deep paint seals on smaller defenders and on the low block to shoot that jump hook that he shoots so well? I know he can't shoot, but put him in position. That's all I'm saying.
Kirk, maybe you should coach. Perk, I love you, but we got to roll here, guys. Got to leave it on that note. Simmons and Embiid have won 10 playoff games together.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
wrongfully convicted man who was the WNBA's Maya Moore fought for was finally released from prison yesterday. You see the moment right there. Jonathan Irons served 22 years of a 50-year sentence after being convicted in 1998 of burglary and assault with a weapon. He walked free Wednesday. Moore was amongst those to greet him as he walked out. The four-time WNBA champion put her career on hold, missing two seasons. To help him, her family met Irons through prison ministry in 2007 before her freshman year at UConn on a penitentiary visit. Here she was on Good Morning America.
In that moment, I really felt like I could rest. I mean, I've been standing, and we've been standing for so long, and it was an unplanned moment where I just felt relief, and just, it was a kind of a worshipful moment, just dropping to my knees and just being so thankful that we made it. And, you know, when I stepped away two springs ago, I just really wanted to shift my priorities to be able to be more available and present to show up for things that I felt were mattering more than being a professional athlete. And so this is obviously one of the biggest and most direct results of that.
Obviously, you guys know I went to UConn, season ticket holder to men's and women's basketball, and I followed Maya Moore for a long time. She gave up 2 years of her prime as a star for this mission. It is absolutely unbelievable when we talk about the sacrifice, and to see this man walk free. It is such a remarkable moment, and just kudos to her. What a special woman and role model. Stephen A., I'll start with you. How significant of an example is this that we saw from Maya, this ultimate sacrifice?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right in everything that you said, and it was the ultimate sacrifice. I think she could, you know, right now, 20 years into this new millennium, she warrants strong consideration for athlete of the century, for being quite honest with you. The sacrifices that she's been willing to take, considering the fact that she's a multiple champion on the collegiate level, on the professional level, and in Olympic competition. That's how phenomenal that she has been as a performer, but then to really put herself on display in terms of the kind of human being that she is, with the level of compassion and sensitivity and intelligence that she has exhibited along this ride. You just can't say enough about her. Jonathan Irons is an incredibly, incredibly lucky man, and I say that taking into consideration that he was wrongly incarcerated for so many years. I only use the word luck because, my God, if Maya Moore hadn't inserted herself into the equation, who knows what his situation would be. Would he have ever been released, for crying out loud? And so, you know, he is very, very lucky to have received her support the way that he has over the last several years. And I'm so thankful and glad for him that he ended up being released from prison. But it also, at this moment in time, for it to happen now, is considerably apropos because of the times that we're living in. Got to remember that it's, again, George Floyd's murder, incredibly tragic, and we understand that. But the people that are out there protesting to this very day, they're not just protesting police officers. They're also protesting things that have been going on systemically for quite some time, particularly as it pertains to African Americans and the issue of mass incarceration. You're having people that are looking at presidential candidates because of that. They're looking at former presidential candidates over that issue. It's an issue that has really resonated in our society, particularly in recent memory. And so when you take those things into consideration, again, you see something like this transpire, it sort of validates the kind of complaints that people are complaining about right now, because there have been far too many African Americans that have been victimized and have been utilized in terms of being a part of mass incarceration, and that issue needs to be addressed. And I applaud her for doing what she did, and I'm incredibly happy for him that he is a free man.
No, yesterday when we were talking about Colin Kaepernick and the fact that Ava DuVernay is making a TV series and it's going to explore his youth, right? Like, what makes Kaepernick tick? What's that story? And I said, if you want someone like, you know, the best storytellers of your time and beyond to tell your story, then you don't do just what's convenient, but you sacrifice on the altar of something larger than yourself. Let me start by saying, like, Maya Moore will wind up with the MVP of the finals or something like that, the way Bill Russell has that award named after him. is going to be named after Maya Moore. There's going to be stuff named after her. I want to start with the kind of player she is, Stephen A. Her resume is hilarious. It's hilarious. Like, there are so many accolades, it's absurd. Starting from the time she's an amateur, like, just her amateur success, All-American every year she's in school, Wooden Award winner, two-time back-to-back. She's back-to-back national champion. She's won multiple European and world championships, including two gold medals. She, like, that's before you get to the pros, where she's basically an all-star every single year. She's the MVP of the all-star game three times. She goes to the finals six times, wins four, and is a finals MVP. I mean, she can shoot, she can defend. Like, what? It's absurd how great a player she is, first of all. It's one thing, you know, because we've talked a lot about social issues and how oftentimes until the stars take a stand, it, you know, it's not the same. Maya Moore is as great as they come, absurdly great. And before the age of 30, she puts it all on hold and says, nope, this is what I'm doing now, and addresses mass incarceration. Stephen A., we are reacting because it's an emotive issue, like this police brutality, right? That's what gets people riled up, because they can see it. But in fact, a much larger issue is the industrial prison complex and mass incarceration of people of color, of African Americans. That's actually a much larger issue. And she has taken that on and then helped get this guy his freedom, who was doing a 50-year bid, already served 22 for something he didn't do. No evidence, no DNA, no nothing, no witnesses for something he didn't do. She is as great as they come off the court. She has made an enormous, on the court rather, she has made an enormous contribution off the court. Stephen A., I agree, so far in this young century, if you're talking about the greatest athletes of the century, she is on a very short list.
Molly, it's important to bring up, because you highlighted, and we all did, the greatness of Ava DuVernay yesterday. When she did the documentary 13, remember what that was about. The 13th was essentially about the 13th Amendment, and what you have is a situation where slavery, the Emancipation Proclamation, outlawed in the United States of America in 1863, but confirmed after Texas was the last state to give in 1865. Remember that slavery was outlawed except basically for a criminal. Because if you were a criminal, essentially, I'm paraphrasing it, if you're a criminal and you're incarcerated, you can then treat somebody as if they're a slave. That's essentially what the 13th Amendment was about, and it showed through the decades, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, how folks were locked up, and you had from hundreds of thousands of people in prison to over 2.3 million people in prison around 2015. That's what 13 is about on Netflix. I would encourage everybody to go and see
100%.
That, especially if you are Black.
Stephen A., I saw and I learned so much from that. And I'll just say quickly, Max, you and I have talked about the Innocence Project at length. Stephen A., I know the work you do at the HBCU. I work with the Endometriosis Foundation of America and with the Boys and Girls Club and try to support my husband's school. But seeing this just goes to show, and I'm not a star, that I'm not doing enough. And I think things like this with Maya Moore and seeing what she's able to do, I hope it has a trickle-down effect for all of us, and just more that we can do in the community and continue to move this forward. I'm so happy for this gentleman that he's free. And he said that, Irons has said that he now wants to dedicate his life to this mission and getting more people out who were wrongfully convicted. So again, that beautiful trickle-down effect. And I'm glad we got to discuss this story here on First Take.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Our Bubble or Nothing series continues today with a look at the Sacramento Kings. They currently have the longest odds to make the playoffs, but I want to focus on De'Aaron Fox. Fox is the first Kings player to average 20 points, 6 assists per game since Isaiah Thomas did it in the 2013 season. Lots of Kings fans' hopes rides on their young point guard. Kendrick Perkins back here with us. Stephen A., I'll start with you. Do you think De'Aaron Fox is a player worth building around?
Wow, that's a tricky question, because my answer would be no, but not because I don't believe the brother can play. He's a significant piece. He's special. He leads them in both scoring and assist as a team. I just don't think he can be the face of your franchise that's going to lead you to a championship. You need a greater player. Now, I'm a huge fan of his. You know, he was the number 5th overall pick the year Lonzo Ball came out. One of the biggest arguments, as Magic Johnson revealed to you, is that Magic Johnson and I argued on several occasions because I was telling him, don't pick Lonzo Ball ahead of this brother. This brother can play. He's fiery. He goes after it. He's athletic. He's fast. He'll get to the basket. He had destroyed Lonzo Ball in the NCAA tournament. And it's not that I don't like Lonzo Ball. I think he just needs to be more assertive, but he's got promise. But he's no De'Aaron Fox, shooting 47% from the field, just 30% from three-point range. But again, leading the team and scoring assists. Him, Buddy Hield, Bogdanovich, you know, these guys like that. I get it. Bagley, I get it. But my biggest thing is that they just need a superstar. I look at De'Aaron Fox as a bona fide player, a Mike Kendrick Perkins, a Mike Conley Jr. type. Maybe a little bit faster, steady, more athletic. But he's the kind of guy that can give you 18 to 20 a night. He could be a significant cog in the wheel. He's a special dude. He's a leader. I love him. But you know, when you talk about the great, great stars in the NBA and stuff like that, that's not the kind of guy he is. He's a bona fide player that can play alongside a star and be a tremendous contributor, a perennial starter, even an all-star, that can give you 18 to 20 a night. But I look at him like I looked at Mike Conley Jr. I don't see that dude. You know, I just don't see that. That's my issue with him.
A potential star, but not a superstar, in other words. I agree with you right now.
Right.
Today, that would be true. If you're talking about winning a championship today, this De'Aaron Fox cannot be your best player. You need at least one guy better than him. But can you win a championship in the future with him as the best player on your team? If he continues to improve, which he does every single year. He is so slept on nowadays, Stephen A., because, look, there are all these sensational players in the league and young players who are right out the gate like, oh, my God, is that an MVP? Luka and Zion and these guys. And it's just such a deep and great league. De'Aaron Fox has a chance to be just about as good as anyone. And people don't see him that way because he's always been slept on. As a college player, he was slept on. You just brought it up. What happened in the tournament? He shut down Lonzo Ball and he gave him the business on the other end to the tune of, what, 39 points? See, he's clutch, too. He saves his best play for the biggest moments. He's a good defensive player, too, Stephen A., but he's a great defensive player when you need it most. Reminds me of LeBron that way, who knows when to put his foot on the gas defensively, right? De'Aaron Fox does the same thing. When you need him to make a play at the end of the game, he's like a clutch defensive player. We think about that on offense, along offensive lines, but they're clutch defenders. He's one of them, and he's explosive offensively. Getting better and better. Remember, it's his third season. Every year, he gets better. If that continues, then in 2 or 3 years, maybe he can be the best player on a championship team. He's certainly fast enough, athletic enough. The real question at this point is, can he shoot it from the outside? He's a career 33.5% shooter from three, but he shot 307, just almost 31% his rookie year, and then again this year. Missed some time this year, but in between shot 37%. So if he's really more like a guy who can't shoot the three, because if you're shooting 31% as a guard from three, it's not gonna cut it. You shouldn't be shooting that shot a lot. You're not really helping anybody. And in fact, you have to shoot it. You're just not being very effective with it. At 37%, he'll be impossible. But let's split the difference more or less. Give him a little bump over splitting the difference. If he could shoot 35% from three and continue to improve the other facets of his game, then by his mid-20s, he should be, if not an MVP player, then at least the kind of guys, who if you have another guy as good as him, you can contend for a championship. Don't take a snapshot of him as a baby still and think that that's as good as he's going to get, because he's shown the desire and the ability to get better.
Here's the thing. when I'm looking at the Sacramento Kings, they're not going to land a superstar. Nobody is going to want to go to Sacramento and play for them in free agency. So with that being said, yes, they have to build around De'Aaron Fox. This young man has proven to get better every single year. Right now, joining an elite company of nine players to only average 26-4, LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, Damian Lillard, Jokic, Luka, Trae Young. So this kid is a stud. And with a guard-driven league, the way the league is now for us being a guard-driven league, you have to build around them because you're not going to get anyone in free agency. So, yes, if I'm the Sacramento Kings, guess what I'm doing, Stephen A. and Max and Molly? I'm you know what I'm doing? I'm backing the Brinks truck up to his house and paying them that paper because he deserves it. And he keeps getting better every single year. He's a young stud. And like I said before, Sacramento is not landing some big free agent in the free agency market. So here it is, a guy that you drafted at the number 5 pick who's lived up to the hype and expectations, Stephen A., and he keeps getting better. You drafted him. He's doing a great job. Hey, pay him and build around him. That's what I...
First of all, we didn't say he didn't deserve his money. He deserves his money. Nor did we say he couldn't
play.
No,
I'm not saying that.
We know he can ball. What we're questioning is whether this is the guy that can ultimately get it done for you. He's going to be a part of it, but they need it. You're right. They probably ain't going to get it, but he needs help. And he needs somebody that's going to be better than him.
So let's rephrase.
That he can feed off to help elevate his greatness.
So let's rephrase.
Yeah, but who's Stephen A.?
So this is how it goes. You're going to have to give him a max deal, right? So can you win a championship if you have De'Aaron Fox on a max deal? I think you can potentially with him on a max deal. That tells me everything I need to know.
You just need somebody else worthy of having a max deal with him. You need somebody worthy of having a max deal.
We got a hard out, fellas.
Got to.
Sorry to cut you off, gentlemen. I got to get in a commercial break here. Kendrick Perkins, always a pleasure. We will talk to you soon, sir. Stay safe. Tomorrow, we will focus on Zion Williamson and the Pelicans in bubble or nothing. What can we expect from Zion? Don't miss that. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles. On some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. All right, the 49ers faithful may have faced some disappointment in our last Super Bowl, but according to a former San Francisco Super Bowl winner, the Niners will pick up right where they left off. Four-time Pro Bowler defensive tackle Brian Young said on the 49ers Insider podcast that his former team is in good hands with Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch. For San Francisco to return to the big game, some say Jimmy G will have to prove that he is elite. Damian Woody back here with us. Stephen A. Smith, you are up first. Is Jimmy G ready to be elite this season?
Oh, please. I mean, please. Why should I concede to that? I mean, you know, listen, think about what he did. He threw for a combined 208 yards in the two postseason games that he had in the NFC, okay, against Minnesota and ultimately Green Bay. They just gave the ball to their running backs, Mostert in particular, and just ran roughshod over those two opponents. That's how he got to the Super Bowl. Then he gets to the Super Bowl, and in the fourth quarter, when it matters most, you got a 10-point lead. And what does this dude go? He goes 3 for 11 for, what is it, 36 yards, an interception, a fourth down sack. Oh, by the way, I didn't stop there. This is what people don't realize. Under pressure, courtesy of my man Ron Jaworski, who used to work for ESPN, obviously an iconic figure in the city of Philadelphia, former quarterback for the Eagles, obviously an exceptional NFL analyst. What does he say? He tweets this after the Super Bowl. Jimmy G with no pressure, zero pressure. 86% of his passes completed, 199 yards, a TD, a 119.5 passer ratings. When he was under pressure, he completed 11% of his passes, 20 yards, two interceptions, and a sack with a 0.0 passer rating. His 2.8 passer rating in the fourth quarter is the worst passer rating in the Super Bowl by a quarterback since stats along those lines started being compiled in 1999. Everybody want to talk about Jimmy G. Listen, he ain't no scrub. Don't get me wrong. I understand the brother can play. They didn't win games with him. They lost games without him. I understand that. But that defense, that running game, Travis Kelce, and Kyle Shanahan are people you think about before Jimmy G ever enters your head. Yep. And you're the quarterback for the team. Stop it. I mean, please, is he ready to be a star? Look, he's ready to look like a star because he got stars around him.
The reality is, the reason people are asking this about Jimmy G, and they asked it about Eli, and they asked it about Flacco, and they'll ask it about Dak, although Dak still has time, is because they're not really, right? When we say elite, we mean, do we see in them an MVP, a regular season MVP, not just the guy who can turn it on in the playoffs because he's in a great organization or on a great team. And so, no, that level of talent is not there. Not like a Mahomes or maybe like where Carson Wentz has the potential to go, right? But could he be elite in the sense that he's a top 10 quarterback? Sure. It's going to come down to exactly what you just said, Stephen A. He will make it or break it in terms of his reputation in big moments in the playoffs. Because if you look at, like, is Jimmy G a winner? You can give Shanahan all the credit you want. The bottom line is, if he's so great at scheming guys open and all that, why without Jimmy G are they 4-20? 4-20 without Jimmy G. So they can't find a replacement guy good enough to get them more than 4 wins out of 24 games. With Jimmy G, you ask? 21-6. The same franchise. They reverse records. They're basically the worst team in football without him. They're basically the best team in football with him. Everything else is the same. So you can't just give the credit to his teammates. You can't just say, well, any quarterback would succeed like that. Because if that was the case, then replacements wouldn't basically never win. He's obviously very good. Can he be great? That's really what we're asking. He doesn't have the arm of a Mahomes or someone like that. I mean, let's leave Mahomes out of this. He doesn't have the arm of a Carson Wentz or anything, or, you know, like that. He's not as accurate as Drew Brees, but he can throw it well enough. He's pretty accurate. He's been clutch until that fourth quarter in the Super Bowl. He's been clutch throughout his career. He gets rid of the ball quickly. He leads and he wins. His reputation will be made or broken on precisely the moment you picked out, Stephen A. Had he hit Emmanuel Sanders, he'd be celebrated today. He missed them. They lost. And so the question is, can he be elite? Jimmy G can move into the top 10 and be considered a great player if he comes through in those situations.
Well, call me when it
happens. Here's my issue. My issue is we throw around this term elite way too much. Okay, when I think of elite quarterbacks, I think of Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson. I think of guys of that tier. Okay, Carson Wentz is an elite quarterback in my opinion. Those guys are the guys that can literally put a franchise on their shoulder and carry them. I think Jimmy G is a good quarterback. I think Jimmy G has an elite play caller in Kyle Shanahan. I think Jimmy G has an elite tight end in George Kittle. I think here's what Jimmy G has to do. And Stephen A., you pointed it out earlier. When the moment arises, make the play. Make the play. I don't think Jimmy G will ever be an elite quarterback along the guys I named, but to be a really good quarterback in this league, when the plays are there to be made, you have to make those plays. And to me, that's what we need to see from Jimmy G. If he's going to go from the level he's at now to the next level, he needs to make the plays in critical times when they're there to be made. And To me, that's going to be the difference in the San Francisco 49ers being a very good team and them being a Super Bowl winning team is making the requisite plays there to be made.
Well,
that to me is the difference.
It's a couple of things. It's a couple of things. And the reason why I brought Molly up into the equation is because I'm giving her credit or blame, whatever word you want to choose, for giving him the nickname Jimmy G. It's Jimmy Garoppolo, okay? I don't recall him earning the name Jimmy G.
And
I don't, but I guess we say it because G is simpler than Garoppolo, but damn it, he doesn't deserve a nickname as of yet, number one. Number two, his QBR in the red zone was 48 last year, which ranked 20th in the league. It was 44 in the playoffs. Last but not least, you have players talking about how Kyle Shanahan basically took the ball out of his hands in some situations. I wonder why that was. That's all I'm trying to say. We got to look at those things and not ignore it. He's not a scrub. Okay, $137.5 million deal, $72 million in guaranteed dollars. We get it. He's not a scrub. We all know he deserves that. He's not a scrub, okay? And some of his decision-making is not that bad. I'd like to say that as well, even though I'm going to leave that alone. Bottom line, though, is this. In the end, when it counted, you know, you got a 10-point cushion. You can't just blame the 49ers defense. Oh, why couldn't they stop Patrick Mahomes? Nobody could stop Patrick Mahomes all year. They stopped him for three quarters.
Stephen A., Jimmy Garoppolo's numbers across the board were better when they were trailing throughout the season than when they were tied or ahead. Across the board, completion percentage, touchdowns, interceptions, passer rating, all that stuff across the board, he's clutch. He was not clutch in that fourth quarter. There's no two ways about it. He missed that throw to Sanders. If he hits it, we're singing a different tune. In terms of elite status, I think Carson Wentz has that potential. But, Damian, I can't put him in that category right now, and I don't know if you replace Jimmy Garoppolo with Carson Wentz playing in the Super Bowl. I mean, the fact of the matter is, while he has much better upside, Garoppolo's consistent. Like, it's ironic that he blew it in the Super Bowl because he's consistent when you need him to be. That's why
the record changes
so drastically. Damian, when Wentz has missed time, the Eagles have been fine. When Garoppolo's missed time, they go from in the Super Bowl to the worst team in football. That's him. That's Garoppolo. It's not his teammates.
Max, you going to sit here and tell me that you think Jimmy Garoppolo is better than Carson Wentz? Who would you take
at this moment,
quarterback?
Yeah.
Going
forward, I would take Wentz because Wentz has more upside. Wentz is such a talent. But right now, who's played better in the last couple of years? Garoppolo. Last season, rather? Garoppolo. Clearly played better.
You saw what Carson Wentz was dealing with as far as personnel around him at the end of last season and got that team over the hump into the playoff, Mac? I mean, are you literally kidding? He was literally playing with wide
receivers. Carson Wentz got healthy against the NFC.
Scout team guys. He was playing with wide receivers without scout.
Carson Wentz was coughing the ball up in the fourth quarter on third down and got healthy against the NFC East. That's what happened last year. He did not have a great year last year.
Yeah, but who was he playing with? Who was he playing with?
Who was his personnel, man?
Not a whole lot of offense he had available to him.
Deebo Samuels, Emmanuel Sanders, George Kittle. I mean, look at the weapons that Jimmy G had all around him. Carson Wentz didn't have that.
Hold on, that's a little overstated, guys. That's a little overstated. Sanders is actually turns out a good player, just not a name brand. And he has a tight end that's headed to the Hall of Fame and another one who's totally excellent. It's not like he has no weapon.
That's what I'm saying about
Jimmy G. I don't want to turn this into a Carson Wentz conversation. What I'm saying is there are guys like Wentz who catch your eye and you go, oh, my God, Jimmy G can't do some of the stuff they can do. You know what Jimmy G can do? All he does, he takes a terrible losing situation, and as soon as you insert him, they almost never lose again. He's a winning player. You can't just say he's lucky because if he was lucky, they'd win without him. They never win without him. They lose almost every game without him. They win almost every game with him.
Collectively, from year to year, they improved. They improved over that last year. They were a vastly improved team with some of the acquisitions that they had coming into last season. Okay. They weren't the same. It wasn't like the same players were there, but Jimmy G, they just lost without Jimmy G.
Traded for Emmanuel Sanders.
Stephen A., they were, let's take it back a year before that. They basically lost every game till he started, then they won five in a row, then he got hurt, and then they lost every game again until he started again, then they won every game, basically.
Let me read you a stat, everybody.
Max, Go back and look at the personnel that Carson Wentz was dealing with last at the end of last year, and then come back and talk to me.
Let me read you all a stat here. But Jimmy G owns the highest career win percentage among all active quarterbacks to start at least 25 games. That's a winner right there.
That's good.
All right, everyone. We'll move on. The Knicks received a head coaching suggestion for their former star.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Knicks president Leon Rose said he wants a new head coach in place by the end of this month. But former Knicks great Patrick Ewing already has weighed in with his choice. According to Newsday's Steve Popper, Ewing's on board with Tom Thibodeau, saying that Tibbs would be a great candidate. The two were together on the Knicks for 6 years when he was an assistant there. Stephen A., I will start with you, longtime Knicks fans. I know Max has abandoned his team for the Lakers, very bandwagon of him. Who would you like to be the next head coach?
How dare you?
Well, to me, it would be Mark Jackson, but the one person that would come to mind before him would be Doc Rivers, because I think that Doc Rivers is an exceptional coach, a champion, and somebody that New York desperately would love to have. I just don't think he's going to leave L.A., but if he doesn't win a championship in L.A. with the Clippers the next couple of years, who knows what Steve Ballmer will elect to do or what Doc Rivers would elect to do for that matter. But outside of that, I've been about Mark Jackson for a long time. I respect the hell out of Tom Thibodeau. He deserves to be a head coach in this game. And obviously with his years with the New York Knicks, you can't summarily dismiss that, and I won't try to. But the reason why I keep mentioning Mark Jackson is because I'm not just thinking about basketball. I'm thinking about how bad the New York Knicks situation has been for years, how the franchise has turned off Knicks fans everywhere. And as a result, you've got to have a coach that's not just fixated on basketball, but I would love a local product that can rally New Yorkers around him, giving him the benefit of the doubt, knowing that when you hear that coach speak, you believe in him and you believe that he's telling you the truth. So it's not just about basketball. It's about somebody that can offset the petulance that James Dolan will inevitably throw in your direction via headlines for wanting to ban people from Madison Square Garden for a multitude of reasons or anything else. The New York Knicks are not a regular basketball situation. I love the fact that Leon Rose and World Wide West are there. I believe in them, and I believe they'll get things turned in a positive direction. But I do think it will go a long way for them to bring in a coach who's a local product. Mark Jackson is from Queens. He starred at Bishop Lockland High School, went to St. John's, starred there in Queens, New York, was Rookie of the Year for the New York Knicks when he came to the NBA. His New York roots are cemented. They're undeniable. And if you saw him sitting, marching up and down that coaching sideline, you'd be more apt and inclined to give the New York Knicks the benefit of the doubt moving forward, thereby exercising some patience and appreciating any level of improvement, incremental or otherwise, that would come our way. That is why I preach about Mark Jackson, because everybody talks about the need for a culture change, and I think he's definitive about being that guy for a culture change, obviously second to somebody like Doc Rivers, who I don't think is going to be available for the next couple of seasons, this season and next season, that is.
Well, we see this very much the same way. I take Doc first, and I would take Mark Jackson after Doc. And let me tell you why I wouldn't take Mark Jackson, or rather, let me rephrase that. If Mark Jackson wants to coach the Knicks, sure, go ahead, take the job. But here's my view of Mark Jackson, the coach, Stephen A. I'm sure. It's a high-paying job. He played for the Knicks. He's from New York for all those reasons. But here's my—and now they have better leadership under Dolan in place. I still don't trust anything with Dolan there running the show. But here's how I see Mark Jackson, the coach. I liken him to Buck Showalter in baseball. Buck Showalter, the manager of the Yankees and later the Orioles. But Showalter was great at creating the right kind of culture and developing young talent. At a certain point, they did not have confidence he could take them over the top, and they got rid of him for Joe Torre and won all those championships. And then Showalter wasn't really back for decades in a place where, realistically, you're going to make a run at a title. So that's the reputation he got hung with. And Mark Jackson, I see in a similar situation. We already know that he can create a culture of a team that believes in themselves and each other. We already know that he can develop young talent. He can do that. What we don't know is, can he take a team over the top? So here's my thought about the Knicks. They ain't winning no championship no time soon, if ever, right? So, yes, Mark Jackson could come in and, from the Knicks' point of view, do a good job getting some of the things right that the Knicks have gotten wrong in those respects early on. But eventually, if things start heading down the right path, and miracle of miracles, even with Dolan there, the Knicks start to become a championship contender, I don't think the guy who's hired now is going to be around then. And that puts Mark Jackson in the same situation he is now. Doc Rivers already got his championship, Stephen A. He can also create a culture and all that. I think he's a better fit. But if Mark wants the job, you could do a whole lot worse.
All right. Listen, bandwagon fan, you're still a fan of the Yankees, right? Because they still win. So let me get you a topic we have right here. Derek Jeter had some harsh words. I'm just messing with you, Max. Recently on the failed negotiations between MLB and its players. I want to read you this quote here quickly. It was disappointing. It was embarrassing at times. The back and forth, there's no trust between the owners and players is the best way to put it. Stephen A., what do you make of what Jeter had to say?
Well, what I fear, and I make the, what I make of it is fear. And the reason why I say fear is because, listen, it's a 60-game schedule. The pandemic has ravaged the MLB season, but it's also intensified the discord that exists between the two sides, the owners and the players. And we all know that they're doing it. The owners just want this money. They want to curb some of their expenses but still have a season and try to get some money out of it. I wouldn't be surprised at all if you had players that went out there and didn't give their all. I'm certainly not trying to sully their reputations or anything in any way. But the situation between the owners and the players is so ugly and is so toxic. It's not beyond the realm of comprehension to see guys out there, some of them anyway, looking like they flat out don't give a damn over the course of 60 games. I'm not saying definitively that's going to happen, but I'm saying based on what Derek Jeter has said, along with what my feelings have been watching this toxic relationship regress even more so between the owners and the players, and both of their penchant to not really think about the fans nearly as much as they should in that respective sport, it wouldn't surprise me at all if I saw players out there that just looked like they could care less. They didn't give a damn. They didn't want to be here. They didn't feel like playing. They were relatively forced to some degree, so we'll just deal with it. If for no other reason, just to stick it to the owners.
Derek Jeter led a charmed life as a baseball player, Stephen A. I don't want to diminish the work he put in. I know he worked very hard, but he was Rookie of the Year and won a World Series as a rookie. He got drafted to the Yankees, which is a team he always wanted to play for. He won 5 world championships altogether, the whole thing. By the way, he has the only 10-year contract in the history of baseball for almost $200 million decades ago that worked out, where the team actually got their money's worth, and he was happy. So he always had a good – even he could even mend fences with Steinbrenner, making a commercial, making fun of Steinbrenner when things went south. And that's not all the players' experience, and Jeter has to realize that. He may have trusted the owners more than most players do because he led a charmed baseball life.
All right. We'll leave it on that note there, guys. Stephen A., was there anything else you wanted to add, or you're good? Sounds like Stephen A.'s good. All right. For Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Smith, I'm Molly Karam-Rose. Thank you so much for hanging with us. We'll be back on First Take Extra and then, of course, back tomorrow, so you get plenty of time to hang with us. Bye, everyone.